Yes, we will. We will take field measurements at designated points. We have not selected those points yet, but we will take field measurements before any construction occurs, so that we understand what the background levels are out there. And then once the line is in operation, we will go back and take field measurements. We'll redo the calculations based on the amount of loading on the line, because that impacts of the magnitude of the magnetic field. And then we'll go back and make sure our estimates are right.
Okay, no further questions.
Mr. Lehan.
Exhibit 23, and Mr. Peterson referred to some cropland that the structures would be placed in, I think. I don't see any cropland out here. Am I missing something?
I have been out in the area two times. Both times were off-season times, so I cannot specifically say whether there is a crop out there or not.
And one other question on concerning the Alkali Flats area. There's a large wetland area that it looks like you're getting into in Oakfield Township. Are you needing special structures to go through that?
The larger water body in Oakville is right next to the juncture where we go north and then turn east. For those in the audience, it would be this area right up here at the point there. It's a little hard to see from the exhibit because of the red obscures some of the edges of that wetland area. But basically, we are just east of that wetland area. The corridor kind of goes a little over the shore or the edge of the wetland, but the majority of the corridor is outside of that wetland area. So we do not anticipate through that area having to have structures in that area. We'll be outside that wetland.
I guess I keep wondering when we get through these wetland areas like that, what are the chances of later having to move the line because the wetland the water levels rose? And has that been thought of?
Yes, it has. For areas to where we know the water level is rising or where we get closer to the wetlands, part of the wetland delineation tries to take into account the highest level that the water is in that area. So, and we also put a safety margin in the reveal of the foundation. So in other words, the top of the foundation will not be placed right on the ground. It'll be a couple feet above the ground, which normally takes into account most of those changes. In the case of where we're down in wetter areas, and this is a good example, that English Coulee retention system, which is on that diagonal, we have talked with the Grand Forks Water Board and asked them what their highest measured water level is, like a 100-year floodplain level. And we design the foundations to be, we design so that the top of the foundations are higher than that 100-year floodplain level. Or whatever the highest water level mark is that we know about.
One other question with that area is looking back at the options considered, and I think it was Exhibit 4, it doesn't look like you ever considered an option with the preferred Route A that extended south of your preferred route through that area, just sort of like straight across the bottom of Pleasant View Township and Fairfield and Allendale. and then extend at a right angle type thing all the way up, which appeared like it would still then only cross the Wapa line once, would miss the alkali, maybe miss the alkali flats area, I haven't seen the whole map yet, would miss your English Coulee completely, and would miss that wetland I was just pointing out, and also, I think, come in from a different angle around the airport. So was that looked at or dismissed, or what happened with that?
I think probably the best exhibit I'll go back to Mr. Lean for that, would be exhibit 6. Exhibit 6 does not have some of the detail, but it does show the route segment alternatives that we were looking for. So on the right-hand side of exhibit 6, you'll see that diagonal, which we have the proposed corridor, is in a blue color, and there are a number of red segment alternative options that are in that area that go directly east, and they go north, or they go east, and then kind of jog north a little bit, and then go east again. So there were a number of segment alternatives. Also, if you look just a little bit west of there, you'll notice that there is a more than one segment alternative that we looked at as well within that area. So really, going through that Pleasant View Township area that you referenced, and I need to go back to exhibit 12J, but going through Pleasant View, going through Fairfield, and even though we cannot see it, the townships below 6th Avenue and Northeast, which is the east-west road that we see on the bottom of exhibit 12 of Juliet, we get into some wetland issues. We get into some mining operations that are down there. We get into prime agricultural farmland and again, occupied residences. So we looked within the entire width of the macro corridors back when we were on step 1 and 2 of the process that Mr. Hennis talked about. We looked at finding viable corridors throughout the entire width. So it was looked at.
Okay. Thank you. No further questions.
Questions from the commission. Commissioner Clark.
Just a few, thanks. The just so I'm sure that I understand it correctly, you discussed stray voltage, induced voltage, and EMF. Now, I'll tell you how I understand the three, and then you tell me where I may be erring. Stray voltage, as I understand it, is where there's some sort of direct connection with an electrical source itself. So whether it's a manhole cover in a city or some other conductive equipment that actually touches the wire and becomes energized. Is that stray voltage?
Yes, that's a part of a stray voltage. The stray voltage is really earth currents or ground currents that are really not going where they ought to be going. And so the leading causes of a stray voltage are an improperly grounded system. And, you know, now we're talking about the distribution system, mm-hmm. which uses a neutral wire as the return path, or an unbalanced distribution system. For instance, if you had a two-phase or three-phase distribution systems, and you got an imbalance between the different phases, those are the two leading causes of a stray voltage. So stray voltage is a concern, and it is something that needs to be considered when we're talking about distribution systems. And again, there have been a number of work out there associated with a stray voltage and its potential impact on livestock and those things. And normally we see that those are grounding issues of the distribution system.
Okay.
Because a transmission line doesn't use a neutral like a distribution line does, and because by the nature of operation, having a transformer on both ends, all of the phases on a transmission line are all going to be balanced. So we're not going to get, you know, that imbalanced type stray voltage.
Okay, so. Thanks. And then induced voltage is where there's something nearby, a transmission line or some other electrical source that becomes energized and then almost like static electricity gives off some electricity. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And that's just a proximity issue.
Yes. A good example of that would be like a barbed wire fence that runs underneath the transmission lines. If that fence is not grounded, well, then there is a potential for that fence to pick up induced voltage, and it's just a matter of a grounding of the fence, and then the issue goes away.
Okay. And then EMF is something else, and we'll hear about that later from a witness that Mincota will be bringing, correct?
Yes, you will, sir.
Okay. In Mr. Peterson's testimony discussing the Painted Woods area, he had asked a question about why does it, aside from the ecological features that you discussed, but he had just sort of a general question of why does it drift into 14 and then back south, understanding that this is more the right-of-way than the corridor, but even the corridor itself meanders just a little bit. Why does it drift into 14 and then back out of 14 to the south before being hooked up and heading north?
Is
there something about 23 that's causing that to be avoided, although you cross 23 at a point, too?
No, it's mainly a landowner input from the landowners in sections 13, 16, 24, and 19, which make up the eastern portion of that Painted Woods east-west section there. So it's trying to find a 150-foot easement, a path within the 1,000-foot right-of-way that meets and best serves all of the landowners through that area. So again, those are preliminary conversations, and those are proposals that we've posed to landowners. That doesn't necessarily mean that's where the route's going to end up, but we are still working on that.
Is there a rationale or a reason that the landowners in that area, other than you might just have a couple of landowners, neither one who wants it, where 14 would be chosen over 23? I'm going to have to admit that if you were just looking at the geography of it, you'd take the shortest route, which would appear to stay on the southern plain as opposed to crossing over into the north and then heading back into the south.
Again, I think that the logic through section 14 and 23, that interchange area, with us being across the section line there, it's not necessarily a landowner concern as much as it is the impact to that area, especially the low-lying area, and finding the least impacting path through there. Again, if we went more north on Mr. Peterson's property, which was one of the early proposals that we had from a design standpoint, mm-hmm. That would have made the line, that would have had less angles in the line, and we wouldn't have to do a jog if we went just a little bit more north on Mr. Peterson's property. But then we angle through one of the thickest part of the trees in that low-lying area. So it's been a balance to try to find the least impacting path through that area.
Yeah, I understand why you wouldn't want to go, or why you're trying to avoid going diagonally through 14. And understand the landowner input on that. But again, I guess I'm just not clear on the issue of the drift into 14 just a bit, and then the drift back into, I don't know if it, I can't tell from this map, and I don't have the Peterson exhibit in front of me, but it appears that, if I recall correctly, it drifts back into either 23 or 24 at some point.
Yes, it does. It moves sort of the south side of the section line. And we can't necessarily see the details of this on exhibit about 12 alpha. I think that when we're at the point of talking about the route hearings, we'll be able to have exhibits that show much more detail through that area. But there are a number of wooded areas, and I'll be honest, I don't remember whether they're in section 13 or section 18 of that's in there, but there are other rationale for drifting to the north side of section 24 that have to do with impacts.
Okay. And you're right. I mean, this, we're getting kind of into route questions perhaps as much as corridor, but
oh no, that's all right.
Appreciate the conversation. You'd mentioned the tree stand, and that you're hoping that it's limited to some of the bigger trees as opposed to most of them, which appear to be shorter trees. Wouldn't that raise the concern, though, that you're taking the oldest growth trees? I mean, by definition, almost, those would be the oldest, right?
Well, in that area, and again, I'm not an environmental specialist and don't know a lot about tree species, but the feedback that I've gotten from some of the conversations is that the majority of the vegetation growing in that area is a lower growth vegetation. So if it's down inside that low-lying area, or even the majority that we see that is right on the edge, on that upper edge, that might actually be inside the right-of-way, it would be far enough from where we are thinking of maybe putting the center line there that it may not be a safety concern, and it's something we can evaluate. So it's not necessarily the age of the tree. It's how high is that going to grow eventually? You know, if it's going to grow to the point that it's going to become a safety concern, well then at some point in time that would need to be that would need to be taken out of the right of way. If it's not something that is ever going to be a concern, well then there's no reason to take it out.
Switching to the alkali flats area on Exhibit 12J, which you testified some to, I was wondering if there was ever consideration given for bringing the line up, I'm going to call it on the western half or the western edge of Oakville Township, Fairfield Township, in that area, and not paralleling the existing diagonal 230 line that comes in, but rather somewhere in that western Oakville and Fairfield Township area, bringing the line up and then roughly paralleling the corridor that already exists with a, looks like there's a 115 and a 230 that come in directly from the west, and just paralleling those lines right into the Prairie substation.
There was a consideration for that. Some of the challenges that we ran up against is if we run up to the west side of Fairfield and Oakville, again, prime farmland through that area. Some of the other challenges that you have is running parallel with the existing transmission lines. Those are terminating at the Prairie substation through that area. So that changes that reliability conversation of a long parallel, and it would be a longer parallel through there. The other challenge was that a large water body in the Oakville area. Another challenge is coming up the western side there brings us into close proximity to the Grand Forks Airport, and the challenge with height limitations that might impose through that area. And then another one is if you look to the right-hand side over by the Prairie substation, there's a large density of occupied residences, a home, that existing 230 line goes basically right through to where they've built right up next to the transmission line. And with the avoidance criteria of 500 feet, that was not plausible to get through that area.
Aren't you utilizing that anyway, though, effectively? I mean, the way it...
No, because we're...
I mean, you're a little south of it, but you could just as well run that south all the way to the western side of Oakville Township, couldn't you?
Oh, yes.
I'm looking at that grouping of homes, you know, just to the west.
We made the turn. I mean, I mean, the reason we didn't parallel or go more north or north of the 230 line, which was something that we considered, was those residences and those housing subdivisions there. The reason that we can't take what we are proposing for the 1,000-foot corridor is that large wetland in Oakville.
So you're saying crossing that was difficult if you were to cross it east-west?
Well, yes, that would be a significant challenge.
It looks like the 115 and the existing 230 basically go through it right now, though.
Yes, and some of those lines have been there longer than the wetland have been there, or longer than things like wildlife management. You know, if you go down in the Golden Lake area, and I know it's not on the exhibit, the WAPA 230 line runs right through some designated wildlife areas. Well, the line was there, and then they designated the area, so that's why that line is there.
And that,
or that's why, you know, it runs right through those designated areas. So sometimes the transmission lines were out there, and then other things have occurred that have happened afterwards.
But you're saying that bringing it up basically 19th Street Northeast, right along the, looks like it extends. It's hard to tell, but it's pretty close to the wetland. In the proposed route as well, right?
Yes,
but it's not. It is. It's not actually through it. It's.
No, it is not, sir.
It's to the. The east of it. Did you get any feedback from the Grand Forks Water Board on the line that would be brought up Fairfield, Oakville, and then sort of east west right across the. Paralleling those other two lines? Did they have any comments on that or not?
We did not ask the Grand Forks Water Board that specifically.
Or other local officials, I mean, not just the Water Board necessarily. But
yeah, that was one of the areas that we ruled out early on, and okay. I did not believe we had talked to any agencies before ruling that out.
Okay, got it. Thanks, that's all I've got.
Commissioner Kramer.
I'd like to discuss then a little bit, Mr. Phillips, the Foster-Eddy County line there over in Columbia Township that you referenced earlier in response to landowner testimony in Carrington. Specifically, Mr. Topps Farm said where he testified that there are, I think he said, 8 families that are in that sort of campus of his farmstead. Realizing you testified that, well, you know, he had asked if you could go north on the section line there and sort of go over from the north. It's still his mm-hmm. property, but further from his home. And you just, I think, testified earlier that doing that would impact 3 homes. Does that sound right?
Yes, and that was running across the whole north portion. So in other words, in my testimony when I was talking about those impacts, that would be basically taking that whole east-west section of line from section 34 in Pleasant Prairie mm-hmm. all the way to section 34 in Cherry Lake and moving that to the north side of the section.
So in essence, crossing the railroad tracks right there and just continuing east.
Yes.
Okay. What are the ramifications of once you cross section 32 in Columbia to going north there, then going east and then coming back down to the existing line somewhere, you know, either on the east edge of Columbia, well, probably there, east edge of Columbia, coming straight down. In other words, in essence, you're creating a short jog around.
Right.
What would be the ramifications of doing that?
The ramifications of making a jog of that manner would be the wetlands that are there in the northeast portion of section 34, the northeast portion of section 35, and kind of the center portion of section 36. Measuring those wetlands, they're all in excess of 1,200 feet. So we wouldn't be able to use the typical structure out there. We would have to design especially a structure which is going to have a higher impact of that. The net result of where we would most probably locate a center line through that area only moves that transmission line approximately 180 to 200 feet further away from those residences that was brought up on the eastern side of section 34 and the western portion of section 35. And then anytime we add a jog in the line, you're adding a significant cost to the line, and you're adding a higher impacts because the angled the structures have a much larger foundations.
Well, I understand that, but in this case, sure. you have the compliance of the landowner. That's the same person in either route. So, I mean, from an impact standpoint, the cost I realize is a different matter, but. But while more difficult, certainly not overly challenging. I mean, you're crossing the Missouri River, for example, obviously a much
right.
bigger body. Yeah. If you were to entertain shorter variances or jogs like this along the 250 miles, would there be a significant number of them? In other words, we had a landowner in this particular case that, you know, with compelling testimony. How many more of those would there be if we were to start considering 4, 5, 6 mile workarounds?
Are you asking, you know, just so to clarify the question, are you asking mm-hmm. how many landowners along the project corridor do we think that may want us to route around them?
Well, I'm kind of asking that. The only thing I would clarify in this situation, again, is in this situation, we do have a landowner whose land is impacted either way, who's a willing participant with this minor adjustment. I mean, would there be a lot of those scenarios?
I don't have an exact number for you, but I believe that there would be a number of them, yes.
Okay. I think I know Ms. Thompson is probably going to testify again, and we'll hear more about the options she might be bringing for the Alkali Flats area. So I have nothing further, but thank you.
Further questions from the commission? Commissioner Cook.
Thank you, Duane, for your testimony. On 12D, Exhibit 12D, on the extreme eastern part of it, it looks like we've got a home right in the middle of the proposed corridor, and it also looks like if you've already got a jog to the south there a little bit, east of there. Why wouldn't you move the corridor just a little bit north to move that home out of it?
the corridor through that area was basically put together, you know, again, due to the wetland over in section 32. Could the corridor be moved a little bit more north? Yes, it probably could, and I would have to look up. I don't have here what that residence is or who that residence is. We have talked to a number of the homes that could potentially be within 500 feet, and have gotten a landowner's concurrence with that.
Well, I would just say that since you're already jogging back to the south a little bit, that's. There might be some opportunity there. It'd be nice to I guess, just so you don't know specifically if you've heard from that resident at all.
Not right off of the top of my head. We could probably get that information, though, very quickly.
Okay. That's okay. We'll just, that's once again to get into the routing thing, but that'd be one area to look at.
Yes,
now,
sir.
At this time, are you going to someone do that late exhibit from the testimony about who the point of contact from UND was?
Yes, that'll be another witness.
Okay, fair enough. And the same, the discussion similar with the your discussion with the Grand Forks Water Board. So you said they preferred the route to run through the Alkali Flats, if you will. Tell me again what you said there. I didn't catch all that.
We had once we had the corridors down to the three routes that were identified in the EA. and what we have proposed here for the corridor with the discussions on the different options that were in the vicinity of the English Coulee retention system, the water board thought that this was a better option than the other ones that we had looked at in that area.
Did they give you a reason why exactly? Just more water storage or water movement or?
That had to do with how the water backs up in that English Coulee retention area. One of the alternatives we had looked at was going due east and basically you being more towards the eastern portion of that English Coulee. And because of the terrain out there, that is deeper water, and that's also where their spillway, their flow control and measures are over there. And they preferred us to be more on the west and north side where we are than on the east and south side.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions from the commission? Anything further, Ms. Smith?
Just a couple of questions. There were questions about the tree removal. Is it Minn Kota's intention to replace those trees on a 2-to-1 basis?
Yes, it is.
And as far as the H-frame structures that you would have to be using near the airport or near the Grand Forks Air Force Base, what kind of impacts would those have on farming operations?
An H-frame a structure has a larger impact on the farming operations. Instead of having the single pole, if you will, that goes down to the foundation, an H-frame, as depicted in Exhibit 10 Bravo, has got two poles that come down, and the distance in between those is not wide enough that agricultural equipment can get it into that area. So it ends up having a much larger footprint or impact on the landowner to have H-frame structures out there.
And what's the spacing then between H-frame structures?
The spacing, and again, I will direct everybody's attention to Exhibit 10 Bravo, but the spacing is anticipated to be 26 feet between the center of one leg to the center of the other leg.
Okay. I have no further questions.
Mr. Sagsbean?
I have no additional questions.
Mr. DeLean? Anything further from the commission? Thank you very much, Mr. Phillips.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Let's be in recess until 2:30, please.